Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
This is the BBC.
Hiya, thanks for downloading the show. My name is Susan Kalman. I'm a comedian and this is my podcast, Mrs. Brightside, a cheerful take on depression. Yes, comedy and depression. Bit of a weird one, isn't it? The thing is, I like to make misery funny and I think other people feel the same way. And I wanted to make this podcast because I think we should all talk more about our mental health and remove some of the stigma surrounding it. I've invited 8 amusing people into a basement in Soho to bare their souls to me. I didn't have any questions. It's not a traditional interview. I just wanted to chat to them about what they thought about their own heads. There's no parameters. There's no definitions. It's just coming from them and me. In this episode, I talked to Felicity Ward, who's a comedian and writer I've known for a very long time. In fact, we've had so many discussions about depression that we depress ourselves.
I don't know if you've ever had to share a toilet when you can hear feedback about the gig, whether it's like you're on the... whether you're on a lineup gig or whatever and you go to the toilet and you hear someone going, eh, she wasn't very good, was she? You're like, I don't have anywhere else that I can go. Can you please just save your criticism?
What you're about to hear is the two of us having the kind of chat we would have at 1 o'clock in the morning in our flat at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Hope you enjoy what we talk about. It's revealing and at times pretty emotional. Felicity, I think I've been depressed for as long as I can remember. I'll be very honest. I don't remember not feeling excessively sad and anxious. For you, are you a pure depressive like myself?
No, depression came very late to me. I had irritable bowel syndrome and anxiety. I didn't know what either of those things were, but I had them from the time I was about a teenager, about 13, 14. I would have panic attacks related to going to the toilet, but it was to do with the other business, not to do with the wee-wees. And so that happened.
I wish people could see your hand gestures. You're doing the other business.
I was doing like
shooting
guns.
Poo, poo, yep. Poo.
The other business. Backside. Backside, trackside. that was sort of most of my teenage years and early 20s. I'm surprised at how many very happy, depressed people I know. I was writing about this the other day and the people that are shocked at other people. Let's just go straight into suicide. You know when someone suicides and they're like, but he was so happy, but she was so happy. It's like, yeah, no one wants to hang around a sad person. Like we learn tools so that you want to be near us.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the most curious things is after I did that dancing show.
That dancing show. Is that what you call it?
That dancing show.
Oh, my God, I love that.
And I would say to people, I don't have a lot of self-confidence. And they go, of course you do. For goodness sakes. And I went, do you not
think... Of course you do.
Do you not think at the age of 43 I've developed a huge amount of skill in pretending I'm fine?
Yeah.
It's, you know.
They're survival tools.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not like a... that's not me being a victim going, oh, I have to survive. But it's like you've got to figure out sometimes, if you don't get well, you've got to figure out how to survive around your illness so that you can operate in the world with other people. Because when you meet other people that have depression, like we have had quite a few discussions of, I don't know how I'm going to get through it, those little days. But we've got, you know, you've got to learn the people... You've got to learn the people you can do that with because you learn very quickly the people that you can't. We're like, can we have a chat? And they're like, why are you crying? You're like, nothing. Joking. It's hay fever. Very bad hay fever, but with self-harm as well.
It is one of the most important things is to learn who.
Yes.
It's not even a trust issue.
No.
It's just people who will get it if you start crying. Because often what sets me off
is not the original thing that's making me upset. It can be the small thing that then reminds me of the something else that sets me off.
That opens the door to your history.
Yes. So if you say to someone, I'm really angry because Tesco didn't deliver the right type of yogurt and that's why I'm sobbing uncontrollably, and they go, I don't understand. Whereas someone else might go, yeah, I completely get that.
Yes.
So it's finding the right people to talk to, isn't it?
Yes, and finding people that aren't, that don't straight go to offering solutions. Mm-hmm. It's always offering solutions. And the thing is, I absolutely get that it's coming from a place of, I want to help you. I really want to help you. I love you. And how can we make you better? And the absolute key to being, for me, the key to being around someone with mental health is saying, I hear you and that sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like just those two things are like, man, that sucks. Mm-hmm. So they're like not stock standard response in that I have a, you know, an index card of things that I say to my friends with mental health issues. But if someone comes to me with their problems, my first reaction is always empathy, mm-hmm. and that's it. And then I, you know, they might need to talk it out or whatever. I say it like it's other people. It's me as well.
You know, these other people someone, with depression.
I know. I can't imagine.
It's something my very glorious wife does. And I love her passionately.
You love her more than almost anyone I know loves their partner. It is so beautiful. Or at moments, I'm envious. Because you two, what have you been together for, 20 years or something?
15, 16 years, something.
And
like
you
that,
both are still giddy around each other. And it's just beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I think it's because I have depression and anxiety. She wakes up every day with a different person.
Just holding her, waking up with white knuckles, gripping the side
today?
Of the
But she always tries to offer a solution.
Yeah, right.
Which can make me angrier.
Yes.
Because if it was that simple, I would have done it. So I didn't get X, Y, and Z. I'm not on this or whatever. Well, why don't you? Okay, can you just let me get it out of my system?
Yes.
And vocalise it, and then maybe I'll feel better about it if I talk about it. Because for me, the act of even talking about it is difficult sometimes.
Mm. Especially the shame attached with what, you know, when it's attached to outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's, this is something that I wanted and I didn't get it, there is a shame naturally in I wanted this thing and I didn't get it. One, that you wanted it in the first place. Two, that you thought you were good enough to get it. Three, that the people that have passed on you have just confirmed every fear that you ever had about yourself. Like to talk about that is very vulnerable, and finding the right people that you can say, I feel vulnerable for all these reasons. And then when they offer solutions, you're like, oh, but I was trying to be vulnerable and now you're trying to fix me.
Do you ever do that thing? I sometimes stand in front of my wife and go, I'm feeling vulnerable.
Yes, it's really helpful. I say to my husband, I'm like, I feel really needy. I need a cuddle.
Yes.
It's so helpful. Rather than trying to figure out a manipulative way to get them to cuddle you, just go, honey, I just feel really needy and sad and little. It's so easy.
Yes. But that happens over time in a relationship. That's one of those things that finding the right person, because your lovely husband.
Oh, so lovely.
Is someone who gets you.
Mm.
And I mean, for me, one of the things about depression and anxiety is that feeling of loneliness, that no one understands you, that there's no one there for you.
Mm.
And when you find a partner, that's why I think I cling on to my wife as if she's a piece of log in the middle of the ocean, because she does understand. And I've no idea how she puts up with me sometimes, but she does. And I think that support has changed my life and my depression. Having someone there who gets me, it has been life-changing.
Yeah. And it's also, I was talking about this the other day. I don't know why I keep prefacing things with things that I've done the other day. I think that I don't want you to ever find out that I've ever said these again and you think, oh my God, she lied to me. It was as if she was saying it for the first time.
I don't think there's an act of legislation. If you repeat yourself in a podcast, I could do something to you.
It's not about that. It's about that I've broken your trust. And as friends.
We're both sitting here naked, Felicity. How could we trust each other more?
I know, it is warm, isn't it? I can't even remember what I was talking about. Oh, yeah. When you... I don't want to say that relationships are the only thing that make things okay, because they're absolutely not. And I've definitely felt lonely in relationships as well. But the idea of having a safe place that you can be yourself is also, I think, an incredible support, even if that is you're living with someone that you can't look at or be near because you're so self-hating, so furious, so depressed, whatever. Just knowing that you have a place. And I think there that sort of links into, I was speaking to this woman the other day, and she was at the front of a train station, and I've seen her there before. She was, you know, asking for change. And there's a homeless organisation that I'm a patron of, and I sort of started to talk to her about that, and I explained the living situation, and she said, I just want my own door. I just thought, fuck, I get that. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine, I know in Australia that homelessness, like people that sleep rough, I think 80% have mental health issues. Obviously, that makes total sense. So the idea that you not only are sleeping rough, but you have nowhere that you can go and close the door. Like, for me, I need to, I don't know what I would do if I didn't have somewhere that I could just close the door and go, right, just for the, even if it's a bathroom. Mm-hmm. And Lord knows I've locked myself in a toilet before. But, you know, that I think that safety is really an integral part of managing mental illness.
Can I just say, if you're listening to this and wondering why Susan Calman's laughing at a woman locking herself in the toilet, it's because Felicity and I initially bonded very deeply over the issue of toilets.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very similar phobia, anxiousness about toilets, lack of toilets specifically. So, for example, I'm filming a new show just now, travel show, and the first thing I said to the production company was, you need to tell me where the toilets are.
Oh my God, I love it.
Before
you so much.
We film something, I need to be able to go to the toilet.
Before you call action.
Before, because otherwise this is all going to go horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I need the toilet.
It's not about that.
But what if I did?
Exactly.
And that's something that we have in common, specifically a phobia before we go on stage.
Yes. But that's, it wasn't until I looked up the symptoms of anxiety. And I did a show about this years ago called What If There Is No Toilet.
It was an exceptional show. I saw it.
Thank you. I didn't know that that was a symptom of anxiety, that you had a fear of losing control of your bladder and bowel. And that's the only reason I started talking about it, because I was so embarrassed. I was so ashamed that I was behaving what felt like a six-year-old, that like I couldn't do anything without going to the toilet first, just in case. It was always just in case. And nothing ever happened. I've never wet myself in public. Oh, I mean, I've laughed. But that it almost doesn't count if you're not anxious about it.
If it's a happy urination on yourself,
yeah,
then it's a positive thing.
I mean, I've had a splash before. I've laughed so hard there's been a splash. I'm human. But it's if there's no toilet and you've got to go somewhere and you don't know how long you're going to be away from that toilet. I remember I did this sounds like a name drop. I did a movie years ago, and my first scene was in I reckon, $10,000 wedding dress. There was 250 extras, and the first scene was in a church, and I was kissing this man that I didn't know very well. That was my first filming scene. And they're like, okay, we're just about to roll. I was like, do you mind if I just go to the toilet? And they're like, And I had to like lift this huge dress and waddle out of the church, and it was around the corner. And fortunately, the first AD was an angel, and she was very, very understanding of it. I think that I told her about that. And so a couple of times she went, do you need to go? I was like, yeah, I do actually. Mm-hmm. So she knew, and that was fine. And I've ever since I found out it's an actual symptom, I've been far more open about it. And when people, if I'm about to film something or record something, and I've recently been to the toilet, and I'll go, oh, I'm just going to go to the toilet. It's just an anxiety thing. It's just something that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's a defense mechanism that I say it like that, or like to get them before they ask me. Regardless, it's made things a lot easier for me anyway.
It's very difficult to explain if you don't have this particular form of anxiety. When I toured my first tour, there were places where there was no toilet
backstage. Oh.
Now, before I go on stage, being very honest, you know when they say, what are your rituals before you go on the stage? I go to the toilet.
Yeah.
Probably 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
I was afraid of people thinking I was a diva. I have to have a dressing room with my own toilet. But it's actually an anxiety thing. It's not anything else.
The worst is, I don't know if you've ever had to share a toilet when you can hear feedback about the gig, whether it's like you're on a lineup gig or whatever, and you go to the toilet and you hear someone going, eh, she wasn't very good, was she? You're like, I don't have anywhere else that I can go. Can you please just save your criticism?
First year of the Fringe, 2000 and can't remember. Underbelly, proper Underbelly, Cowgate.
Yes.
Right?
Oh.
The room, you had to stay backstage while the audience came in.
Yeah.
The backstage area became filled with large bottles of urine as the Fringe went on, because the boys would simply relieve themselves. We could not do that. I'm not doing that.
Hey, you need a bowl.
I'm not going to do that. So as soon as the show's finished, run downstairs, because it's now an automatic thing. I need to go to the toilet straight after a show. It's now Pavlov's dog. You finish the show, you need to go to the toilet. In the queue. Now, that first year, Felicity, I'm going to be very honest with you. The show was awful. I mean, it was not good.
Stinky, stinky, stink, stink.
Stinky, stinky, stink, stink. But it was on at 8:15 at night. So I would often sail out on a Saturday night, because it's a stand-up show at 8:15 at night. Mm. People would go, what's on?
Oh, yeah. That's a person.
Sold-out show, 155 people.
You did a 155-seater in your first year? Jesus Christ.
Right? Sold out. I knew within 5 minutes that they hated me.
Every night.
Pure. No, this particular Saturday night. Pure. Not even hatred, just disinterest.
Oh, that's worse than hate. At least hatred is engaged.
Absolutely. This was just... But you have to contractually do your 55.
You got
to
do it.
You can't just go, should we just forget it? Show finishes to tepid appreciation at best. Run down the stairs. Queue for the toilets. A woman in front of me had been to my show. And she was tutting at me. And then she turned around and said,
no!
You've ruined our whole evening. And at that point, I need to go to the toilet. So I have to stand and go, I said, I'm sorry. And she turned away and queued for the toilet.
Oh,
and
my
I'll
God.
Always forget just that misery of trying to be a performer, standing in the queue while a woman is going, well, you've just ruined everything, haven't you? Knowing in my heart, I mean, it was a terrible show. It was a terrible show. I knew that.
But you still tried.
I did try.
You still, like...
I did try.
That's the thing is, sometimes I see terrible comedy, but I know that they're trying. Like, I'm like, you're trying. And that it is... I don't feel like this every day. It sometimes sounds like a cop-out. It is really brave to stand on stage just by yourself. That's it. That's brave, because hardly anyone would do that. Now, I know that brave is the worst compliment that you can pay any comedian. It's absolutely...
Especially a woman.
Oh, the absolute worst. Oh,
you're
worst.
So brave, Felicity. Well, so brave.
Or well done.
Well done.
I'm like, you're well not done. Your granddaughter. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. well done. That was brave. But like when you're, it's... Again, it's that vulnerability of saying, I have written this joke. I think these jokes are so funny, people should watch me. They're so funny, they should pay for it without knowing what they're going to get. That's the conceit of comedy. It is slightly arrogant, but it also, it's a huge risk to say that implicitly in the work that you do. So to turn around to someone who has tried for an hour to make you laugh, like you didn't get up there and go, this is anti-comedy.
Oh,
I'm
no.
going to try and not make you laugh. It's not a difficult, this isn't like difficult comedy that you're trying to get people to understand that it's an obscure art. You're like, these are jokes that you were trying to say that you ruined their night with an hour. Like, when you say it was terrible, how bad are we? How bad?
Okay, so the problem was what I was trying to do was I was told that the best way to be a comedian and to be successful.
I hate this already.
Was to have 10 minutes, distinct 10-minute chunks that Live at the Apollo or Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow could come and see. You would go on that, you would become famous, your life would be sorted.
Sure.
So I was trying to write 10-minute chunks because I was told that's what to do.
Right.
2 years of disastrous shows. Really not great. I mean, they're not awful, but they're not great. I took a year off and then came back and did the show about equal marriage.
Was that this Ladies Not For Turning?
Yes.
That was the year that we met, was it not? That was the year we were in the same room.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that was the first year I'd done personal comedy about what I felt about things. And that's the year I actually decided I wanted to still be a stand-up comedian.
You had a belter that year.
It was good. People did not see I'd ruined their evening.
Yes.
But what was interesting for me is stand-up comedy suddenly became interesting for me when I started talking about things that were important to me.
Mm.
And that was about equal marriage and all of those kind of things. And, I mean, I don't know, when you did What If There's No Toilet, that seemed to me to be a year where you'd already been very successful, but that show was, you were everywhere that year. And you were talking about something that was very personal.
Yeah. I did a show the same year as you did This Lady's Not For Turning.
Hedgehog Dilemma?
The Hedgehog Dilemma. And that was a similar thing in that it was, that was the first time I'd done a story show or like, you know, a chronological period of time show. It still had jokes all the way through and it had all of the stuff that I usually do. But it was very, very hyper-personal. And I was nervous about it beforehand, which I think is a good thing to feel like you're taking a risk and you're taking a chance. And Hedgehog had that same effect. It was in Australia, yeah, sort of like was very acclaimed. I don't know what the word is. Mm-hmm. It went really well in Australia. And then it was I'd taken Edinburgh off the year before. So I thought, well, I'll come back with this show. It's done well everywhere in Australia and I'll change venues and I'll get a publicist and I'll get a promoter and we'll do everything differently. And if that doesn't work, at least I gave Edinburgh my best shot. And it was the Olympic year, so it was a tough year.
Yes, yes.
But it did really well and everyone thought that was my first show there. Thank God. Because the second show there, Melly. The second show is what my toilet show was about, where that's where the anxiety started. That's where my toilet stuff started, was in 2010. My second show in Edinburgh. Oh, that wasn't where it started. That's where it amped up.
Where it became
very problematic.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Because usually with things, they start and then, and to be honest, the Fringe is the cause of a lot of my problems.
Yeah. I was really worried about it the other day.
Yeah.
I was like, my friends have just finished doing the Melbourne Comedy Festival and I'm worried that I can't do what I've been doing that's working for me for the past nearly 18 months.
Mm.
So I said this to you before. I've been burning out for 9 years, essentially, or 8 years I was burning out. And I'd take a little bit of time off. I'd feel better. I'd go, I'm better again. And then the work would slowly creep back in and creep back in. And I have, you know, I grew up in a very working class household and we were pretty poor. And we still had a really great childhood and we lived in paradise, but you could live cheaply back in the 80s in paradise in Australia. But there's still a fear for me that if I don't get enough work, I won't get enough money. If I don't have enough money, I can't pay rent. If I can't pay rent, I can't pay for food. If I can't pay food, I'll die.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, that's the basis of I need to work is if I don't work, I'll die. So for as soon as I became a comedian, I was a self-employed artist, and lots of artists have this where you think every job is the last job. So, and our family motto basically is if you need more money, you work more. So I moved to the UK and kind of had to start again. And I was afraid that once the money was gone, I'd have to move back to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want that. So I just worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked and worked. And I just kept burning out. And when I burn out, that's when my anxiety comes up. That's when my depression comes up. And it feels overwhelming, unmanageable, insurmountable, and forever. It feels forever. So a couple of years ago, my fella was saying, I don't get enough quality time with you. You're always working weekends. And I thought this was a huge gesture. And I said, well, I will not work Sundays anymore. And I was like, Felicity, you are magnanimous, generous, giving, you know how to be in a relationship. And what that would mean is I would probably gig 5 nights a week, right in the day, or work in the day 5 or 6 days a week. And Sunday I would spend in bed going, honey, I can't get out of bed. Do you want to have a cup of tea?
Yeah.
You might relate to this, Susan. And
quality time does not mean, you know, that quality time where you put me back together again.
Yeah. Arts and crafts afternoon.
I think you mean quality time where I'm a normal human being and we can have fun together. As
does quality time mean you actually pick me up and take me to the shower? Is that quality time? It sounds like it. So I did that like 2 years ago and didn't understand why my husband wasn't blown away with my generosity. And it was because the same thing was happening in the last, coming up to the last Edinburgh Fringe I did, which was 2016. I was burnt out before I got there.
Mm.
And then, as you saw, I had it emotionally, I had a terrible fringe. Professionally, it was wonderful. Had really good fun with all of my friends. Lots of people saw my show. It was reviewed very well. But mentally, I was very bad the whole time. And I spoke to Aisling B, and she, before the Fringe, and she said, maybe you don't do the Fringe next year. And my first reaction, of course, is always offence. Like, doesn't she think that I can do it? Well, I'll show her. Like, she's only doing it because she cares about me. And then when I got to the end of the Fringe and realised how mad I was again and sad I was, I went, I think you need a year off. And then at the end of 2016, I made a new rule for myself where I'm not allowed to gig more than 3 nights a week. And emotionally and ego-wise, very painful.
Yes.
Because I want to be a comedian. And I see these people that work all of the time around the country, people that I love and respect and adore, and I want to emulate in lots of ways, like not their comedy, but like that's the kind of career that I want. All of a sudden I've put very strict parameters on whether I can achieve that. And I can't do that. But the flip side of that is I have not had depression since the beginning of 2017. I've not had depression. And last year was personally one of the worst years of my life in the things that were happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a multitude of very hyper-stressful things happening. And what I was stressed like any other human would be. But I wasn't anxious. I didn't have like, I was anxious, but it was externally driven, if that makes sense. You know how you just, I just have free floating anxiety, and it comes again from working when I'm underslept, overworked, underfed, underexercised, all the things that are good for me, I'm not doing them. So my anxiety is I'm on high alert at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Last year, I was not on high alert. I was only on high alert when I was around the situations that were causing me stress and sadness. So it is, I feel, that's why I'm worried about doing the Fringe this year, because I can't work 3 nights a week.
Yes, but you're not going into the Fringe in that exhausted state.
True.
Because there's no question, and it's something that I learned later in life, was that undoubtedly my physical being affected my depression.
Yes.
If I had been drinking a lot, and I know you don't drink, don't drink at all.
No.
Alcohol. You drink, you're having a cup of tea now, I'm not calling you a liar to your face. But you don't drink alcohol.
No.
During the Fringe, I stopped drinking alcohol because it makes me bad.
Yeah,
it doesn't help me at all.
It demolishes your nervous system. And the nervous system is what your anxiety and depression attacks. So if I'm anxious and then I'm drinking and then wake up and my nervous system is, you know, like a vibrating chair, and I do that every day. Mm-hmm. And if I was drinking, when I was drinking, that's what I did. I'm astonished that people drink through the festival. I'm so impressed.
It's not a good thing.
I just couldn't do it. I can barely do it sober.
Mm-hmm. Never mind trying to do it when you're drunk.
Oh.
I think the thing is, taking personal responsibility for my own depression was the best thing I did.
I absolutely agree.
My head is the way it is, but there are things that I can do. Now, I don't always do them. I'm like you.
Oh.
I haven't had a day off in 9 months. My depression is not in a good place just now, and that's my fault. I should take a day off. Mm. But instead, I'm sitting here with you.
What? I'm sorry to do this to you. Can I ask why you haven't had a day off?
Because...
Like, honestly, if you take a deep breath and you're honest about why you haven't had a day off.
I worry that I won't get asked to do things again.
Yeah.
That's just what you said.
Yeah.
If I say no, they'll get someone else to do it. They'll be fantastic. And then I'll be stuck.
Yeah.
You know, and I think because we have to work so hard to get anywhere, stand-up comedy is not a meritocracy at all.
Susan, if you're funny, you'll get the work. That's just how it goes.
Oh, my God. And so if you get a shining opportunity, you feel like I have to run towards the light. Otherwise, someone else will come in and then I won't get anything.
And the problem with the UK is that we are surrounded by so many talented people.
Yes.
The standard and the quantity of great comedians over here.
It's disgusting.
I was going to say wonderful, but yes, disgusting.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting though, because, and then every year someone else comes through and you start, you know, talking to them. But I think I've not been taking care of myself adequately recently.
Yeah.
And I know that.
Well, because I've been travelling well, I've cut back to swimming twice a week. I need to swim 3 times a week. I need to. And I'm swimming twice a week at the moment. And because I'm not bad, I'm like, well, do you really? I'm like, what are you doing? Why would you jeopardize your mental? It's just like my brain is at me at all times. Like it's just looking for any opportunity. And it's not like depression and anxiety. My mental illness voice in my head isn't like, hey, my pretties, huh? We're going to bring you down. It's your mate's voice. It's like, well, you know, you're doing pretty well. So like, you don't have to go swimming. You've got that other stuff anyway.
Yeah.
The voice is actually comes across as a genuine concern and a friend of yours.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I don't have voices in my head, so I don't have a mental health issue, but I do have voices in my head.
Yeah, I don't have like audible.
No. I have Waldorf and Statler. That's how I always describe it, which is someone saying you're rubbish. That's essentially... You're rubbish. That's what is constantly playing in my brain. And I always think sometimes if I work really hard, they'll disappear.
Mm.
But that just means you become tired.
So tired.
So tired.
Do you know what I figured out? It's 2016. I still remember it. I was worried. You know that thing of like you want something and you don't get it.
Yes.
And I realised when I was in primary school, like this is so textbook and humiliating.
Okay.
When I was in primary school, I had a teacher that bullied me. He actively bullied me. He used to humiliate me in front of the class. And I loved him because he was so smart. And I was in a very small school and I was a smart little kid and I wanted to be stimulated. And he stimulated me. But he would also humiliate me. And the year before, when he came to school, he would pick who would be ducks at the school. So who did best. And the year before me, he gave it to someone that didn't do the best in the exams, and they were surprised that they didn't get it. And then the same thing happened to me, I think. It was between me and another girl. It actually could have been the other person who got the right marks, whatever. Mm-hmm. I didn't get ducks at the school. I am still trying to get ducks of the school.
Yeah.
That the rest of my life, and I do not know how to resolve that. And I've spoken to therapists about it, multiple therapists about it. But it's actually, it's such an easier way to go, oh, that's why you're doing that. You're still trying to write 1992, which is impossible and mad.
When I was in primary six.
There we go.
There was a display on the wall
of
something. And the teacher said, we want someone to write out the cards to go under the pictures. And she didn't pick me. And I remember saying to her, why didn't you pick me? And she said, because your handwriting isn't that nice. And I spent that entire summer learning how to write again. And I copied the kind of the very florid
cursive
writing so that I could write better. Because she didn't, I mean, it was a display on a wall in primary six.
Yesterday, someone said, you've got very nice handwriting. And I said, yes, because when I was 10, my librarian gave me a C for handwriting and I'd never got a C before. So I was never going to get a C again. My handwriting is beautiful.
When I was in the Brownies, I was in the Pixies, right?
The band. Very progressive.
And in the Brownies, there's a sixer and a seconder. So the sixer is in charge of the Pixies, the seconder is second in command.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to the point where Brown Owl was choosing the sixer and seconder. And I was the seconder in the Pixies. And I said to her, because I expected it, because I was the best.
Obviously.
I was best new recruit. I was clearly the best. And I said, why am I not sixer?
Mm.
And she said, because we have to give someone else a chance.
Why? Why do you have to give someone else a chance when clearly the best person in the job is here?
And I've always wanted to be the sixer in the Pixies. Mm. I've still got my brownie uniform.
Does it still fit?
It does. And it's got the wee seconder badge on it. And I sometimes take that out of the drawer and think, Calman, one day you'll be sixer.
Oh, mate.
Of the brownies.
It's sometimes, you know what we're doing? It's no one can see this invisible sack of insecurities and sad memories that we have with us at all times. And what we're doing is a little show and tell. Of like, you know, when kids like have their Santa sack and
yeah.
they like their sisters and brothers and they'll show each other what they got in their Santa sack. That's what we're doing, but with sad memories.
Here's the interesting question. Other people, I like speaking to people with anxiety because I have something in common. So I spoke to a woman the other day who has a similar thing of they wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning in a cold sweat because of something they once said when they were 16 years old
yes.
to a complete stranger at a party. That's a very common theme with people with anxiety. And I liked it because she got me. And so I would say my way of coping with it is I went to CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy. Have you done that?
Yes, twice.
Did you find it helpful?
Yes, incredibly.
I liked it because it's about changing behaviours. So what I do is when I wake up with that memory of the bad thing I've said to someone, which really wasn't that bad, I pretend, I substitute it now with a different memory, which has never happened. So I'm on Caroline's on Broadway. I've just done a successful stand-up show. In the audience is Samantha Bee, Sarah Paulson, Kate McKinnon, all of my heroes. And then we go to the bar for a drink afterwards. Now, none of that happened. But as soon as I start having that cold sweat, I remember a memory that hasn't happened. And I've trained myself to go to a happier place that I make up in my own head.
Wow. See, I did CBT. I've been through it twice, and both times I've done it, I found it so incredibly helpful. The first time, life changer. The second time, my therapist actually said, Felicity, you don't need to be here. I'm like, you're absolutely right. 2 weeks later, worked myself into the ground, had a month of the worst depression I've had in my life. But I remember all these tools. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that worked for me. And I do not know how to maintain discipline. Because what you've just said, that sounds like such a wonderful idea and you can train yourself, absolutely. But then my brain whispers, yeah, but you know that's not true. That voice is very loud to me. So when I say to myself, you didn't get the thing, but mate, you did a great job. You worked really hard and you should be really proud of yourself. And my real self says, yes, I am proud of myself. And then my mental illness yeah. goes, that's what weak people do. They let themselves off the hook.
I think I'm the worst person in the world because A, to think you're good is arrogant,
mm-hmm.
which that's, I don't, it's not necessarily the Scottish Presbyterian upbringing, but don't compliment yourself. For the love of God, that's what terrible people do. Don't become arrogant. And the thing my wife says is she wishes I was kinder to myself.
Yes.
I think it's frustrating for people who are our partners.
Yes.
When we are so unkind to ourselves. And I wish I was kinder to myself. I wish I enjoyed things more.
Yeah. I think that I don't know. I don't know how mean I am to myself. I know that I set myself unrealistic goals. And I know that I have the voice that says, if you're kind to yourself, that's what weak people do. Like that's that. So I have that voice. It's not like I don't have all the time. I don't have, you're a loser. You can't fucking do anything. Why are you even here? No one likes you. It's a lot quieter than that and more insidious, but with the same insinuation.
What's similar is that year, 2016, we were both at the Pleasance. We were both at the Pleasance above. We both did shows. We were both selling out. We were both doing really well. And the two of us were sitting going, instead of walking through the Pleasance courtyard like Billy Big Bollocks, going, we are hugely successful comedians. That's not what we did. No. And instead of enjoying that month where you did a very successful show, sold out, great reviews, blah, blah, blah. Mine were less good. 3 stars. I'll take it. I wasn't trying to change anyone's life, okay?
You sold out your entire run before you got there.
Yes.
And you added shows and sold those out.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I was awful. I was terrible.
Obviously.
It was a terrible show. Terrible. Everything was awful.
Yeah.
What I determined to do, and it was about in the past 3 or 4 years I've really had a think of my life. I think because for someone who was once suicidal, I really don't want to die.
Yeah.
It's an extraordinary thing, that turnaround, when you go, I once hated myself, I wanted to die. Now, I really don't want to die. I really don't at all. And I don't want to waste my life. Mm. And I think I've wasted a lot of my life with all this.
But do you think... Do you think that you had a choice?
Oh, no.
Well, then you didn't have the tools, so you didn't waste your life. You didn't have another way. Like, because I also understand that. Because I really think that sometimes, you know, I did this TV record and it was a live stand-up thing. And I've not had a lot of TV work in the last couple of years. And, you know, I'm away from home and I gave up a lot to be here and... And there was a couple of people who were newer than me and they'd been given double slots and I'd been given a single slot. And my first thought was, oh, this is the death rattle that they've given an old comedian one last shot. Like the brutality. And I just think like I'm constantly having this conversation. And what I don't do is I don't yell at my depression and my anxiety anymore. I don't go, no, it's not like that. I try and say like, I've been over here for 5 years. If I didn't come over here, I wouldn't have met my husband. I'm so much better for having been over here. My comedy is better. I have a beautiful community of friends. I really feel loved in the comedy community over here. I really feel like I have...
You are loved.
Thank you. But like I do have genuine, beautiful friends that I've made in the time over here. Lifelong friends that I will never stop being in contact with. And as hard as it has been over here in some regards, like I can't call it a waste of time. I can't call it a failure because of the wonderful things I have achieved.
Yes.
And I mean in all, I don't mean just in comedy, I mean in all aspects of my life. So I also think, you know, that for the time that I was really sad, so I got a CBT at the beginning of 2015 and that's when I started swimming as well. And that's when my life changed so much for the better. If I hadn't got as sick as I did in 2014-15, that winter, then I probably wouldn't have tried to make the change that I did make that changed my life. So I can't call that a waste of time. I can't call being sad a waste of time because that's the springboard that's got to me to where I am now. And I think that it is unkind for you to look back at yourself and say, oh, I wasted so much of my life being sick. You like, And I know it's the cliche, but if you had MS, you wouldn't go, oh, look at you wasting your life with your MS.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the kindness aspect, I think what I struggle with most of all when I'm depressed and anxious is making sensible decisions without the cloud of shit around. You know, and everything becomes out of perspective and everything becomes slightly out of control. And especially when you're somewhere like the Fringe, where perspective is difficult anyway, it can be a very difficult place. Mm. But what you have now, looking forward to the Fringe this year, A, you're in a better place. B, I think we're all a lot more honest with each other. Comedians.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, who would I have spoken to? I don't know.
Yeah.
Now I could go almost anywhere in Edinburgh and find someone who I know is a little bit wrong in the head and we could probably sit down and have a cup of tea. Because there's more of us now, I think, who are happy to share our anxieties with each other. And I think I know when the warning signs are there as well.
Yeah.
And to do something about it, even if it's not successful. I know when I'm, you know when you're teetering right on the edge of that... Cuckoo. This is about to go horribly wrong.
My concern is that how quickly I can still go to insane. Uh-huh. Like that I can... So something happened a couple of weeks ago and I just went into something that had nothing to do with me, but I still went into deep shame, deep insecurity. I'm not good enough. I'm never going to get what I want. I'm never going to be the person that I want to be. And it really took me by surprise. It was just like, I was doing great.
How quickly it could potentially...
Like in a matter of minutes. And then it stayed with me for days, just these echoes. It's just like being in a nightmare chamber where you're operating in the world, but your thoughts are somewhere else.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, that's where mindfulness and meditation helps as well. But
do you do that?
I do.
I never managed it.
Can I... look, I... absolutely get it. Meditation is very, very hard. Mm-hmm. The thing that I've spoken to people about, the thing that people have spoken to me about the most is, one, they're not good at it. That seems to be a frustration. And two, that they get angry that they're not good at it while they're doing it and it's another reason for them to hate themselves. That's what I've also heard. Mm-hmm. And three, that they can't sit still.
That's a problem for me.
So... would you like my suggestions or ideas about this?
Always open to suggestions and ideas.
None of this is saying you need to do this, but this is what I found helpful, that meditation is not about immediately, it's not about having a peaceful mind, because you're not going to get a peaceful mind straight away because you haven't been meditating and you're mentally ill. That's so... what it became about for me.
I love my conversations with you. You've never meditated and you're mentally ill, Susan. Carry on, Felicity.
That's actually all I had to say about it. No, but when I first started, it wasn't about, I had to say, right, I'm sitting down, mind, and I'm sitting down for 10 minutes. You think about whatever you want. If you want to think about the past, if you want to stew in the past, fantasize about the future, do it. But I'm sitting here for 10 minutes. So if you go calm, great, that's what I'm here for. But if you don't, I'm sitting here anyway. You're basically telling your brain, whatever you want to do, that's fine, but I'm sitting here for 10 minutes. And it's basically CBT, but for meditation.
Right.
Where the behavior is, I'm sitting here for 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 2 minutes. But it's about setting that time for yourself that says, this is for me. Because I remember this happened years ago. I had a panic attack just before I went on stage and I was emceeing the Hi-Fi Club, which is the festival bar, first Friday night in Melbourne Comedy Festival, sold out room. There's, I don't know, 400 people there. And I have full panic attack. I get tears in my eyes, get a lump in my throat. I get this, my chest tightens and I don't know what I'm going to do. And then this thought came to me that said, I am not my body. And I was like, okay. And then I said to my anxiety, I'm going to go on stage and I'm going to go and do 10 minutes of stand-up comedy. You can come with me if you like. That's okay. But regardless of whether you come with me, I'm going on there. And it went away. And so the idea with meditation is depression, anxiety, you can sit with me here for the next 5 minutes or you can go away, whatever you're going to do, but I'm going to sit here and do this for myself. And that alone... helped me to settle a little bit. I also have an app that I listen to. I can't just listen to nothing. That's impossible.
Nothing's terrifying.
So there's an app that I use that has different soundscapes, and they have guided meditations. So they have 2-minute guided meditations. So for 2 minutes, the lady tells you what you're doing. And then they have ones that are like, they have different programs. And in the program, mm-hmm. they'll say things like, you might be getting angry at yourself because your mind's wandering. There's no reason to show yourself some compassion. So it's based on how we think. Mm-hmm. So that was very helpful for me too. So I have one that I do, I would like to say every day, but yes. I don't. I do it maybe on a good week, I'll do it 5 times a week. On a bad week, I'll do it twice.
Listening to this podcast, Felicity Ward, we don't know who's listening to this. It could be anyone. It could be people with depression. It could be people who don't have depression. That's the joy of podcasts. I love podcasts.
Me too.
I'm obsessed with podcasts. I listen to hundreds of them. Before we finish up, is there anything that you want to see? I mean, what I want to see is that depression can be, you don't, depression doesn't need to be negative. There is a way out of it. There is a way to deal with it. There is, I'm the person I am because I'm depressed, and I don't think that's a bad thing. What would you say to people listening? Let's go for the depressed people.
For the depressed people.
Sitting in their pants.
I feel like the most real thought to me is that when I'm sick, I feel like I'll never be well again. And when I'm well, it was like I was never sick. That's how I genuinely feel. And I say it repeatedly to remind myself that neither of those things are true. That every time I've been sick, I've come out of it. And that every time I've been well, I've got sick again. And that's not, it's not a curse, but what that tells me, that's a mathematical equation. And what that tells me is that if I need to work on acceptance more than anything else.
Yes.
And that when I'm sick, you know, I've had depression for I don't know how many years diagnosed, but I still get angry when it comes.
Mm-hmm.
And that if people are angry at themselves because they're sick, I completely understand, and other people understand that. Because I think I can tell all of these people a happy message. But the reality is when you feel depressed, you feel like someone has stolen something from you, like yourself. And I feel like when I am depressed, that I'm watching someone else do a terrible impression of me in the world, being an asshole to people that I love, not being able to perform work or friendships in the way that I can and know that I can. And it's like I'm trapped in, you know, when in those police movies when they're behind the double-sided glass?
Yes.
It's like I'm on the other side of the double-sided glass going, don't say that. That's not what you say to people that you love. That's not how you behave. That's not how you dress.
Hmm.
And I think, I don't know, I hope that that's helpful, that if people are not doing well, that you are not the only person that has thought that, and that I have thought that, and that it does pass. And there's nothing I hate more than when I'm sick, when people say, it'll pass. I'm like, yeah, I know it'll pass.
It's not helping me right
when?
Now.
When?
Yeah.
When? Give me a date.
Acceptance is a huge thing.
It's a huge thing.
Self-acceptance. It's a huge thing. And, you know, Felicity and I are two of, I mean, the coolest comedians.
The coolest.
I mean, people envy us all the time.
I have my shoes off.
So if we're all right.
Yeah.
And we are all right.
And that exercise is an absolute non-negotiable.
Exercise. Completely.
I hate it. I hate exercising.
Yep.
I hate it.
Yep. But I'm managing 3 times a week at the gym.
So good.
And I need to do 4 or 5.
Yeah.
I need to be doing 4 or 5. But 3 is okay. It's keeping me going. But exercise is important. But generally, trying is sounds easy, but don't hate yourself because you're depressed.
And don't hate yourself if you've tried to do something and you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Because
like it's meditation.
You're doing the best you can with the tools you have. But the key is to keep trying.
That's still my favourite part of this entire conversation. You're not good at meditating, Susan, because you've never done it before. You're mentally ill. Well, thanks, Felicity, for constantly being positive, being a delight.
Do you know what I mean, though?
I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
I love you so much.
I love you too, Felicity.
That's not what I meant. I meant when I first started, of course I wasn't going to be good at it because I was mentally ill.
I'm going to come and see your show at the Fringe, and I really want you to just point at me and go,
you're mentally
ill.
You're
mentally
ill. Of course you're not good at meditation. Everyone, if we can just stop the show, Susan Kalman's in.
She's mentally ill.
She can't meditate.
Stand up and I'll just go.
Of course she can't meditate. She's mentally ill. That's the name of my next show. Of course you can't meditate. Jesus.
Of course she can't meditate.
You're mentally ill.
Cool on. You're mentally ill.
It's actually not bad.
Yeah, your PR would love that. Thanks, Felicity.
Thanks, Susan.
I'm mentally ill.
Of course you can't meditate.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to the podcast wherever you download your podcast from, and then you'll automatically get next week's episode. Next week, I'll be talking to Al Murray.
If you come on going, oh, look at you wankers, why are you laughing at this shit? And have you took me 6 hours to get here? And have you any idea how tired I am? And all that. And then if you add into that, and my wife's left me. And then I suppose you can end up in sad clown territory.
If you like the show, do leave us a review, as that'll help other people find it too. And if you want to get in touch, then you can email mrsbrightside@bbc.co.uk. And finally, we know this podcast talks about things that might have affected you or someone you know personally. If that's the case and you'd like some further info, head to the Mrs. Brightside page on the BBC website and we'll put up some links to places you might find useful. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, Kalman out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.